This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 1205. It's great to have you with us for the Wednesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. We've got cloudy skies. The temperature should hit 35 this afternoon, and we're expecting a little bit of snow tomorrow.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Let's kick things off with an update on Wall Street. At Bloomberg, here's Joan Doniger.
Well, Cisco, you can blame trade for the way investors traded gains for losses today. The Dow right now down 161 points, the NASDAQ 43, the S&P 15. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index is falling about 0.5%. CF industry shares are leading losses there. Now, on Wall Street, the U-turn took place after the Democrat who is in line to charge, line to chair the House Trade Subcommittee said the new NAFTA deal worked out between the U.S., Mexico, and Canada is going to need changes to pass Congress, and those changes won't be quick or easy. Tech gains had topped 1%, and they have all gone away, too. Apple shares leading the losses there. They're down 2.5%, nudging ever closer to bear market territory, down 20% from their high point early last month. Investors are worried about slowing sales of iPhones, and analysts have said that raising the price isn't making up for that slowdown. Back to you, Cisco and Chris.
Thanks, Joan. On today's Noon Business Hour, the state of the economy and a global slowdown. We'll talk about that and a possible explanation of what started the wildfire in California.
And one company sinking because of that possible explanation. Personal Finance Wednesday, credit card rewards, how you can really use those here at the holidays. And smart speakers, Google wants one not just in every home, but in every room of your home. All of that and loads more on today's Noon Business Hour.
Discussing your dollars, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Trading of shares in Pacific Gas and Electric was halted after the price plummeted following disclosure of an incident that could be tied to the deadly California wildfires of last week. We'll cover that in our next segment. Right now, a concern a world economic slowdown could spread to the U.S. While a top indicator of inflation, the Consumer Price Index, is out today, and we are joined by Jim Key, president and chief economist at South Texas Money Management in San Antonio. Jim, welcome to the Noon Business Hour. What is your read on the global economy?
Well, you know, if you look at some of the global purchasing managers indices, the PMIs, they've been slowing for quite some time, really through about the last half of the year in Europe, Japan, and China. And I think most of that is or a lot of it's driven by the trade angst that's getting somewhat fatiguing. If you look at business surveys, you know, a lot of them mention trade concerns as a reason for kind of fence sitting and withholding capital expenditures or revisiting last year's capital spending plans.
And then the United States. So let's talk about the U.S. economy.
The U.S. economy has been more the beneficiary of U.S.-centric policies, really the tax cuts interacting with the kind of a pendulum swing in the regulatory front. So the U.S. numbers look pretty good. It looks like the fourth quarter so far is going to be a little bit slower than the third quarter, but we don't have a lot of, you know, data in yet, but maybe 3% rather than 3.5%. And the question remains, you know, how much of that will can continue if with the slowing global picture. It used to be the U.S. could kind of do its own thing and the rest of the world would follow with the lag. And it's not real clear whether or not that can happen anymore. You know, China's roughly the size of the U.S. and Europe. So those are some big areas that probably weren't as influential 20 years ago.
Talk about the impact of rising mortgage rates. You have both purchase and refi applications dropping.
And that's to be expected. Rising rates, you'd expect refi rates to fall, and maybe mortgage new apps a little bit. if you look at historically, if you try to, you know, which is more important, growth or mortgage rates are important, but growth is about twice as important. So to be honest, I'm a little surprised by the weakness in the housing data. I think that might be more of a pause, particularly when you look at some of the other things, the demographics and the new family creation rates. So I think housing's behaving a little more anomalously this year than normal.
Is there, this is, I guess, maybe more of a psychological question than an economic question, but since we've had these super low rates for so long, is even a little uptick in the rates enough to make people feel like all of a sudden mortgages are expensive?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. And the truth is, we don't know. You know, you'd be kind of a charlatan. We've never gone from 7 years of zero rates to rising 200 basis points. And historically, the 200 bips wouldn't be that significant. But, you know, it might well be that when you're going from zero for so long to rising, and mortgage rates, as you know, with that trend in the Fed funds have gone from, you know, 3 to close to 5. Normally, again, historically, that wouldn't really impact housing markets as much as what we've seen this year. And that might be the reason. It might just be a different dynamic.
And what are you reading right now in oil?
Well, you know, you look at the decline in oil, the global growth picture slowing, you know, that I mentioned earlier should put some downward pressure on the price of oil. That is demand influences. And I'd say, you know, the better work suggests that's responsible for about a third of the decline. And about two thirds is just supply. You know, we've had more supply out of Iran than we've expected, more in the U.S. OPEC hasn't really enacted the restrictions yet that I think the market was expecting. So that's probably not going to continue down. We would expect the pressure long term, 12 months out, is going to be for upward movements in oil rather than down.
Jim, nice to have you on our program today. Thanks for joining us. Jim Key, President and Chief Economist at South Texas Money Management in San Antonio.
Coming up, shares of a West Coast utility plunge due to a possible link to wildfires.
Cashing in with conversation, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The disclosure of an incident that may be tied to California wildfires has sent shares of Pacific Gas and Electric reeling, down by right about 30% at one point today. Joining us to bring us up to date on the International Auto's Orland Park business line, Anusha Sakui, reporter at Bloomberg News based in Los Angeles. So at first, Anusha, thanks for being here. Just tell us PG&E. What is PG&E? Because a lot of our listeners maybe have never heard of it.
Well, very simply put, it's California's biggest utility and provides power to the region. It's, as you said, you know, lost 23% of its value. You know, that's sort of the latest. And, you know, but it's not the only utility here in California that potentially will get affected by any lawsuits. Southern California Edison as well is you know, potentially going to be affected by lawsuits that we're just starting to see filed.
And you have significant problems, obviously, because of damage from the fire, but also this sort of analysis that maybe there might be some liability. That just came out today. Tell us about that.
So, you know, we've had various fires in the area, and, you know, it's nearly 50% contained, but, you know, there are new fires. I mean, there was a new fire starting just yesterday. But just to give some perspective, you know, the death toll from the Campa fire in Northern California's Butte County has killed 48 people. It's the deadliest fire in the state's history, given, you know, and that's saying something given the state's history of wildfires. The Wolseley fire, which is, you know, affected, like, very, you know, areas like Malibu, where you've seen people like Lady Gaga evacuated, you know, has obliterated hundreds of homes and businesses in the LA and Ventura counties, and at least two people have died there. So we're really just starting to get a measure of the fallout here. So, you know, one thing that we've seen in the past 24 hours is lawsuits being filed by residents of Paradise, which was the town that was, you know, burnt to the ground. And the question is, you know, how much liability these companies could face. Some estimates by Citigroup, for example, said that the California wildfire, the damages could reach as much as $15 billion. PG&E already faced, over $17 billion in liabilities from the 2017 wildfires, according to one estimate. So, while PG&E was already, trying to cope with last year, it's sort of already been overtaken by another record year of wildfires here.
Well, PG&E has disclosed that it submitted an electric incident report to the California Public Utilities Commission one day before the wildfire. So that is saying something.
Right. And so basically the situation and why this is coming up is because both utilities potentially had some kind of malfunctioning at or around or before the time that the fire started. And, reportedly California authorities are already investigating the cause of the campfire, which is the deadliest blaze. It's destroyed something like 130,000 acres of land. So question of negligence, in terms of the maintenance of their lines, et cetera. What's also quite interesting is that, the state of California had, put in place under, Governor Jerry Brown help for these utilities to kind of cover these costs, for example, helping them structure financial, selling bonds backed by customer revenue, ways that they could pass on the cost to consumers in some ways, help them mitigate the liabilities. But there isn't, as long as they were found not to be negligent. But that didn't account for the losses of this year. This was for 2017.
And this is Anusha Kasui. Thanks so much for joining us today from Bloomberg in Los Angeles. Still ahead, Personal Finance Wednesday, using credit card awards to help keep your holiday budget in check.
WBBM News Time, 12:25. A check of the markets from Bloomberg. Here's Joan Doniger.
Cisco, Trade, and Apple turned Wall Street from a positive direction to losses. The Dow now down 190 points. The NASDAQ, 51. The S&P, 19. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is falling 0.5%. CF Industries leading the losses there. Now, trade came into the picture when the Democrat who could head a key trade subcommittee next year said the new NAFTA deal needs some work to get through Congress, and this won't be a quick or easy fix. Apple is leading the drop in tech shares. They had been up by about 1% before turning around, but investors don't see a way for Apple around falling iPhone sales, even with higher prices. Shares are down a little more than 2%. Apple is getting closer now to bear market territory. Investors are putting some money in Sears shares, though, to bring them closer to 50 cents apiece. Sources say Sears' parent company is close to working out a deal that would give Sears and Kmart the loan needed to stay open through the holidays. Now, let's check in with Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
At the Chicago Board of Trade today, we've had very limited trade in the corn, 2.25 cent range from up 1.5 to down 3/4. At the moment, December down 0.5, 366. Beans have been in a 9 cent range from up 9 to up 3/4. At the moment, we have January's up 3.5 at 881 3/4. And wheat's been in a 10 cent range from up 3 to down 7 at the moment. December wheat down 5 3/4 at 502. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities and Normal. You can reach us at 800-779-1515.
Thanks, Pete. With business at 25 and 55, live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Joan Doniger, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto.
I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio, WBBM.
Stocks are losing ground today. We'll see what's moving Wall Street.
Personal Finance Wednesday, tips on using credit card reward points to maintain, even expand your holiday budget.
Google and other companies want you to have a virtual assistant in every room of your home.
Police say the murder of a barber whose clients included players on the Bears was committed by the jealous ex of his girlfriend.
The Justice Department has issued an internal legal opinion supporting the appointment of Matthew Whitaker as acting attorney general.
Wall Street right now, the Dow Industrial is down 145, the NASDAQ off 44. S&P 500 down by 17.
Clouds in Chicagoland, but some sunshine, too, as we head to a high of 36 degrees. Right now, 29 at O'Hare and Midway, 33 along the lakefront. The noon business hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park.
Well, the markets are lower today. Let's talk with Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist at B. Riley FBR in New York. Welcome back to the noon business hour. Art, is this mostly Apple or other considerations?
Yeah, Apple's certainly taking a bite out of the market for sure, down another 2% today. So, you know, that's in every major index and in a whole bunch of ETFs. So that's certainly going to leave a mark when that's off as much as it has been. And we're going to have to wait for that selling pressure to subside. It's sitting at or near the 200-day moving average. So hopefully that's where it finds support. There's a couple other things happening, though. So we've got some news out of Washington and you know, I suppose not that unexpected, but Democratic Representative Maxine Waters talked about the Trump administration's wanting to have fewer regulations in the banking industry, something that's going to come to an end. Not exactly doing the banks any good today. The ETF that follows the banks down about 2.6%. And then Representative Bill Pascrell from New Jersey in an interview with Bloomberg said we need to do more work on the NAFTA 2.0 before it can pass Congress. So a little bit of agitation coming out of Washington. I would tell you, though, that there's more good news than bad news, I think, in general today. CPI came in. It was very benign. I think that the price per barrel of oil catching a bid finally after 11 straight down days is probably a good sign. And the yield on the 10-year sitting at 3.11, probably, you know, pretty good sign that we've stabilized at this level here and seem to be in a range. So I think there's good news that's being ignored and some bad news that continues to find a path of least resistance lower.
And what areas of the market do you think have the best opportunity right now?
Well, I can tell you this: I think the energy sector, the equities behind the energy sector probably bounce more than the commodity does, and I expect to get a bit of a bounce. I think we're in a supply-related sell-off in the commodity, and I think what we got wrong was the Iran sanctions. Not as much oil came offline, so there's a short-term oversupply. I think OPEC is probably going to square that up before the end of the year. You see a bounce in the commodity. I think you see a bigger bounce in the equities. I also think we're getting to that point where we're maybe out of the bathwater in several sectors. I would include technology, both new and old. I certainly think healthcare has been bouncing around like a political football that it always is during an election cycle and probably has a nice place to go to the upside. And I certainly think consumer discretionary, it's a very good time to be thinking about consumer discretionary if, in fact, you've got lower gasoline prices coming into the holiday shopping season, which we rarely ever get. You're going to get good reports like we saw from Macy's today, and I think the rest of the complex looks good.
Interested in your take from an investment standpoint on PG&E. A few minutes ago, we had a reporter kind of detail the fact that they had an incident reported about 15 minutes before the wildfire, at least a large one, got started. So there are some liability concerns. Stock is down about 25% today. From an investor standpoint, what do you do with PG&E, or do you just stay away from it for now?
I think it's the latter, Cisco. I think when you think about the liability, it's always hard to know. It's hard to know how much that liability is actually insured and, you know, who those insurance companies are. So the liability probably gets spread out by more than just PG&E. But right now it's in no-touch land. I think that at some point in time when the dust settles and we figure out who's culpable for what and where the liability stands, we'll have a better idea if this has been overdone or if this is the start of something larger. My guess is it's going to be liability that's shared. And you know, I think it's just too early to stick your toe in the water in that particular utility.
Now, is it interesting, too, because it is a utility, it may be different than some industries where they're still going to need the gas, they're still going to need the electric. I mean, in theory, at least, PG&E survives. It's just a matter of not knowing what's going to go on in the near term.
Well, it can survive, but it also can be certainly impaired, and its balance sheet can be impaired. And if its liability is massive, it can certainly get to a point where they have to restructure, and that could leave little or nothing for the equity shareholders if they have to take on new debt or if there's some, you know, event if the liability is large enough. At this juncture, we just don't know enough about, you know, how much liability there is and how much of it falls on their shoulders. So I would say, and, you know, you bring up a very good point. We still need their services, but, you know, at what equity value does that mean at the end of the day after they're done sorting out what the liability is?
Let's add one thing here. And on a worldwide basis, there some are saying that the world is the slowing right now, the financial areas around the country, the world. What do you think?
Well, I would tell you this. We have seen signs of softness. China had some good economic data today, but in general has slowed down a bit. Their GDP for the third quarter was slightly lower than what we anticipated. I think in the Eurozone, they're struggling with a couple of things, a two-and-a-half-year-old battle to sort out the Brexit situation, and then a new battle to get Italy and Brussels to concur on a budget for 2019. I think that some of those things will be transitory. I think that the Italians and the folks in the Eurozone will probably sort this out because Italy's more important to the zone to keep that together and to keep that project together. But I think that'll be a rolling thing that perhaps stymies a little bit of growth. But I think the biggest concern I have in global growth right now is trade and tariffs. And I think unless and until we get something done with China on trade, and the good news is we're actually going to talk about it and have conversations over the G20 meeting at the end of the month, it's going to be hard to project any strong pickup in global economic growth. I think that's the one headwind that we have both in the U.S. and certainly globally. So I think that a lot of problems get solved if, in fact, we find an exit to the trade war highway with China. And I think that, you know, is at least the conversation is starting. It's probably not going to get resolved until 19, but I think a lot of the things that we have in terms of concerns right now get alleviated. And what also happens is you have the strength of the dollar that probably weakens a bit. And I think that, you know, that helps emerging markets in general and certainly stabilizes commodity prices, and all sorts of good things happen if we get some answers on what's going on with China.
Thanks for the analysis, Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist at B. Riley FBR in New York. Up next, Personal Finance Wednesday, making the most of credit card points this holiday season.
Money Talks, as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday, sponsored by Geiger Wealth. Holiday spending can turn into a long-term burden if you're not careful. Let's talk about how you can use credit card reward points to your advantage. Ted Rossman, industry analyst at creditcards.com, based in New York. Ted, just for clarity here as we begin, we're talking about miles or points that people have already earned, right, that they've been earning throughout the year ahead of the holidays?
That's right. And this is a really good time to put those to use and save yourself some money around the holidays.
So people assume when you're talking about points or miles or whatever, they just often think in terms of air travel. But there are a lot of other things that people can do with these points that they've been racking up.
Points and miles are as good as cash. And I really like to redeem for cash back. Your typical ratio is going to be about 1 cent per point or mile. That's about a 1% return. Although you can do better. You can get cards like the Citi Double Cash that gives 2% back on everything. Capital One Venture just relaunched yesterday. That's essentially a 2% back card. So, yeah, you can really, really rack up some rewards there. You just have to pay your bill in full every time. That's critical because credit card rates have never been higher. We see the national average right now about 17%. So you got to pay those bills in full. Then you can get the rewards.
How can you maximize what you get back?
For a lot of people, they just want simplicity. There are people that love to treat this like a game, and they jump through all kinds of hoops, and they do elaborate transfers to airline partners, and there's no doubt you can get great value doing that. But our research has found that most people like to keep it simple. So a straight cash back card is the preferred method for most Americans, and you know, you can do that for straight cash back. You can do that to cancel out purchases, like travel purchases maybe, on your card. You can even redeem for gift cards or merchandise if you would like.
Can you use it as a gift? And does that get complicated?
I would say in that case, the best thing to do is probably to redeem it for cash and then use that cash to buy something. You could also redeem for a gift card and either give that to somebody or use those dollars to buy them something. That's probably better than trying to gift them the points themselves. That gets a little bit more complicated.
When it comes to people who are trying to really maximize this, saying, is it better to have miles? Is it better to have points? Is it better to have cash back? What are the determining factors in which kind of credit card you use based on what kind of rewards you're going to get?
Just like investing, diversification is key. Most of the cards that we like to recommend are the so-called transferable points programs. So think like Chase Ultimate Rewards or American Express points, things that can be used for a variety of different methods. You could redeem for cash back. You could transfer to an airline or a hotel. it keeps your options open in case there's any sort of devaluation that happens, like an airline makes a big change and all of a sudden their miles aren't worth as much, or all of a sudden that airline doesn't make sense for your particular schedule or lifestyle. It's good to keep your options open and get one of those transferable cards.
Thanks for the insight, Ted Rossman, industry analyst at creditcards.com. This time tomorrow, Technology Thursday. Still to come, the home of the future could include a virtual assistant in every room.
It's 60 Minutes of Financial Planning. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Smart speakers are becoming a major accessory in homes as their makers push to have them included in every room. Joining us on the International Auto's Orland Park business line is Dan Gallagher, tech reporter for the Wall Street Journal's Heard on the Street column in San Francisco. Thanks for joining us today, Dan. A smart speaker, what's the definition?
Well, it's basically a speaker you can talk to and it'll respond to your questions. I mean, Amazon did the kind of pioneered this category with the Echo, and you know, it's so you can say, you know, Alexa, play me the Rolling Stones or something, and it'll do that. And these kind of started as, you know, kind of voice automated music speakers, but their design and intention is much broader than that.
So I'm trying to imagine a home, an entire home fully equipped with smart speakers. How would that look and how would that sound?
Well, it probably wouldn't look terribly different because these things are very small. But, what they're designed to do is, companies like Amazon and Google have, pioneered this voice activation technology that they want to kind of be essentially as a platform to be in this, in the future of the smartphone, of the smart home. So the idea being that any place you're in your house, there's an input device that you can speak to, and you can, you know, if you have the, you have to have the stuff obviously that can tie into it, but you could ask it to change the temperature, turn on lights in a certain room or the whole house, or turn on the oven. There's kind of a wide, the range of potential is very wide. A lot of the devices are still kind of being developed, so I think it's still very early days in this, but where these companies want to go with this is pretty clear.
And with some companies like Amazon and Alexa, obviously Amazon is hoping to be able to sell more of its products, but it's deeper than that, isn't it? Isn't the data that they're getting out of this stuff something they can make quite a bit of money on?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think the end goal for either is to just sell, you know, devices, because the profit margins on devices aren't usually that great anyway. For both, it's sort of to control. I mean, if you think about it, once you outfit your home and maybe you choose Google speakers or Amazon speakers, but once you decide to go down that path and buy enough speakers to have this up and then other devices that are hooked in, you're pretty wired in, and it's a lot harder to switch out of that than to say switch to a different type of phone. So, if they get in on the ground early on with consumers on there, you have like what's essentially a really sticky customer base, and then that's something that you can upsell all kinds of things to and be kind of in control of this important relationship that, again, is small now, but it's probably going to get a lot bigger in the future.
Dan, thanks for joining us today. Dan Gallagher is tech reporter for the Wall Street Journal's Heard on the Street column in San Francisco. You'll find past programs later today, a podcast of this hour at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the all-new Radio.com app.
WBBM News Time, 12:55, wrapping up the noon business hour with a check of the markets from Bloomberg. Sponsored by Baird, here's Joan Doniger.
Cisco, the Dow took a big leap lower in the past half hour. Right now, the Dow is down 268 points, the NASDAQ 72, the S&P 27, and these are all losses of about 1%. Now, the Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is down almost 1%. CF Industry shares still leading losses there. Apple and financial shares are the Dow's biggest losers. Apple fighting off analyst doubts about iPhone sales. The rest of the market worried about trade. Now that a Democrat in line to lead a key trade subcommittee says the new NAFTA deal needs work and it won't be easy to fix. Macy's big show may not actually be the Thanksgiving Day parade, but it is rolling into the holiday shopping season with momentum last quarter, seeing double-digit e-commerce growth. With business at 25 and 55, live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Joan Doniger, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS-FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.